Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Tuesday, October 27th, 2015. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, we'll talk with Ishmael Hope and Alice Taff about the upcoming Klan Conference. Kelly Manning and Melanie Adams will give us an update on Halloween activities at the Canvas. We'll get the details about November painting lessons at Sketch. And we'll talk with Rebecca Daniels and Thunder Mountain High School digital arts teacher Jana Lelchuk about an upcoming photography contest for students. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more right here on a Juno Afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Voting rights for Native Americans in Montana have received a boost. Montana's Secretary of State has directed counties with reservations to establish satellite registration offices, which would make it easier for Native Americans to register to vote. Amy Martin reports.
The state of Montana is roughly the size of Germany, but has a population of only 1 million people. Many Native Americans live in some of the most remote parts of the state, and accessing the established voter registration offices presents multiple challenges, according to Marcy McLean of the Billings-based group Western Native Voice.
To get registered, you know, they have to travel to the county office, which not only is a financial hardship, but some of them don't own vehicles.
And once they do get there, McLean says many Native Americans experience discrimination.
And it's not a pleasant experience to go into these county offices, where sometimes we experience a negative interaction when we go to conduct our business there.
The new directive from the Secretary of State instructs counties to examine their practices and to establish satellite registration offices on reservations if invited to do so by tribal governments. McLean says this would help integrate voter registration into the daily lives of Native Americans.
We go to our tribal offices to conduct daily business. So it would be, the location would be in an area that we frequent more as residents of the Native communities on the reservations.
For the last 10 years, various bills have been introduced to the state legislature designed to increase access to voter registration on reservations. So far, those efforts have gone nowhere. McLean says this directive is needed to ensure counties are in compliance with the Voting Rights Act of 1965. For National Native News, I'm Amy Martin in Montana.
Federal investigators found Andover Newton Theological School broke the law when it planned to sell off 80 pieces of its Native art collection, including a sacred Tlingit halibut hook. Some tribal leaders say repatriation laws should be tougher. KTOO's Elizabeth Jenkins has more.
Rosita Worrell has been fighting against the school's Native art liquidation since June. She's the president of Sea Alaska Heritage Institute and also served on the NAGPRA Review Committee. That's the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act. Worrell said the Fed's decision was bittersweet. It reaffirms the private college is subject to the law because it receives federal student loans.
We were happy, you know, that the federal government did find that they were obligated to comply with NAGPRA. But I was also saddened, you know, to think that we had to spend all of that time and effort to really force them.
Back in July, the school's president, Martin Copenhaver, maintained the items in the collection weren't sacred. David Katzik, a Tlingit tribal member, identified the halibut hook as a sacred object that was used in religious ceremony. But the college has 45 days to contest the decision.
To the best of my knowledge, we haven't received any request for informal discussion.
That's David Tarler. He works at the NAGPRA office in D.C.
And there has been no filing of a request for a hearing at this time.
Tarler said the college has reached out for technical assistance, but it should have filed a summary of its Native art years ago. It allows the tribes to see what's in the collection. And Andover Newton might not be the only institution skipping this step. Worrell says the process can lead to oversights.
There's no real teeth to the law. I mean, if I did not file my income tax, you could be certain that I would be hearing from the federal government and there would be immediate action for me to comply with the law. In the case of NAGPRA, we don't have the similar kind of requirements.
Because of this, the Alaska Federation of Natives recently passed a resolution. A group will work on proposing amendments to NAGPRA. I'm Elizabeth Jenkins.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by WanderingBold.com, providing American Indian crafts and supplies since 1969. Shipping nationwide, virtually everything you need to powwow is at WanderingBold.com. Holiday delivery on orders placed by December 15th. Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Tuesday, October 27th, 2015. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 6 minutes after the hour. I've been joined in the studio now by Dr. Alice Taff, linguist. Welcome to the show, Alice.
Thank you.
Nice to have you here. And writer and Native scholar Ishmael Hope is here as well.
Thanks for having me.
All right, we're here to talk about the Klan Conference. Should we start with you, Ishmael? We were talking a minute ago about the history. When did this come about?
Yeah, the Klan Conference is a gathering of Tlingit clans and scholars. People have been working with Native issues and Native, you know, spanning many, many different fields. And my father was one who had the vision, my father, Andrew Hope III, that in many ways there was an imbalance, power imbalance, where, you know, our stories were being told, our culture was being talked about, our people were being talked about, where it was going out there, and the people had very little control over that. They had very little way to exercise their voice and to share who they really are. You know, my dad said that the elders maybe told him that they felt maybe a little too polite to allow, you know, that kind of thing to happen. And so it was the idea that we come together as equals and have it like Peter Metcalf, who's been involved since the beginning. You know, he's have it like a three-ring circus, you know, almost, where it may seem chaotic, but it's really, there's something beautiful in having all these different fields of, you know, you feature your elders, you know, you feature the language, you feature the people themselves, but then you have all kinds of different fields that we get into. And so it started in 1993 in Haines and Klukwan. I believe it was also done in Ketchikan and Sitka. So it stopped for a while in 1997, but then it was revived by my dad before his passing in 2008. It was revived in 2007 with Steve Hendrickson, Richard Dauenhauer, Sergey Kahn. They'd started talking about what would it be like to have it happen again. And so it happened in Sitka 2007, and since then it's been going pretty much biannually, but sometimes we had to delay it a little bit. I think one time we had to do that. We've been trying to consistently keep it going.
Okay. Alice, can you tell us a little bit about what it's going to look like at the conference?
Sure. Every day, Thursday morning, Friday, Saturday, we'll start with a plenary session, everybody in one room listening to an important speaker. Thursday, the conference theme, Ha Sakhu Ha Shletzini, our names, our strength, that theme will be illuminated by Norma Shorty, who will be talking about finding our names. And Friday morning, Tom Thornton and Harold Martin will be talking about place names. And Saturday morning, there will be an authors panel of academic and Tlingit scholars who will be talking about their publications. And after that, every day, there will be concurrent sessions. The three-ring circus starts. So there will be different presentations in three different rooms happening at the same time, and it'll be the poor participant's choice as to how they're going to decide what to go to when. The special events will be Wednesday evening, tomorrow night. We're starting with Warming of the Hands, where the local clans welcome the travelers who are coming to the conference, and that will be at the Jack from 6 to 9, and that's open to the public, and everyone is welcome. The rest of the events are by registration at the conference. Wednesday night is a Warming of the Hands. Thursday night, we're having a very special event at the Governor's Mansion. The First Lady is playing host to Indigenous readings, and that event is by invitation only. Thursday for lunch, there's a special luncheon in honor of Walter Porter, a long time Sharing Our Knowledge, is the title of the Klan Conference organizer and supporter. Friday night, there's a banquet in honor of the late Richard Dauenhauer. And Sunday, there's a brunch as a wrap-up.
I can tell you've been working hard on this because you did that all from memory.
Yeah. Wow, so. I know the schedule.
What do you like most about this conference?
You know, I think that our elders have so much of just a vast library of knowledge, things to share. And we still have our elders. I mean, sometimes people talk so much about cultural loss, how much how much is not there. But I think it's a gift with the elders that we have and what they'll present. So that's the first thing. And then just coming together, you know, UAS students who are volunteering to get involved, Susie Edwardson's one of our lead volunteer coordinators, that they're people are energized about Native cultural education issues, and there's all kinds of different things. One of my examples my dad tried to set with the idea of three-ring circus is that, you know, we weren't just one thing, you know. There's the traditional, the oral history, the oratory, the telling the stories that was magnificent. But my dad was also a poet, you know, and he was, even though he prioritized the elders, there was a value he had in reading about anthropology, you know, and seeing and checking with that, with what he knew, archaeology and, you know, all kinds of different fields, scholarly fields as well as literary and artistic fields. We have some amazing artists as well who are presenting, Preston Singletary, for example, you know, and people have been working a lot with not just Tlingit, you know, sometimes it's Tlingit focused, but there's, you know, we welcome our neighbors, Northwest Coast neighbors as well. So there's just a lot going on.
Alice, what do you appreciate most about the conference?
I think the rich variety of it. It's so exciting to see everyone come together. And I think the thing I appreciate most is being able to be involved in it the way I have been, which sometimes is the thing I appreciate least about it. And I find myself wavering between thinking, nope, never again, and, oh, next time, let's do this. We have such a wonderful lineup of speakers, as Ishmael says, in a wide variety of fields, and we have this time a lot of art and museum talks. So we have people from the SLAM, from the Burke Museum in Seattle, from the Seattle Art Museum, from other places too, and Preston Singletary. We have Aldona Janitis talking about Tlingit art. And we have a weaver's exhibit in the main hall and a presentation about the art of weaving, too. So we have resources people talking about traditional resources and how to meet their needs in the present and continue into the future. We have education. Lance Twitchell will be talking about organizing an immersion school for Tlingit here in Juneau. I'll be leading a discussion on the connection between ancestral language use and health benefits. And I'm trying to think of kind of, we have historical records of clan migration. I can't think of a field that we don't have covered here.
It sounds very comprehensive. Ishmael, who would you like to see there?
I think everyone's welcome. Of course, you have to register and check out the website. That's sharingourknowledge.org. Yeah, sharingourknowledge.org for registration. But I think everyone is welcome. That's part of the example my father tried to set, and that is very important to the organizing committee, that, it's all levels. It's all different types of people. I mean, to me, it's a little closer to my heart to see the elders there, to see Tlingit elders who want to share the knowledge, whether they're signed up or whether they're, they're just there to visit and to offer their words, when we have an opportunity. And then young people who want to, revitalize the language, who want to learn the language. I mean, that's just very important to me, but everyone who has an interest, I think, is welcome to be there.
Okay. So it starts tomorrow night, 6 p.m.?
6 p.m. at the Jack, warming of the hands.
Okay. Ishmael, would you be kind enough in Tlingit to invite folks to this conference? Not to put you on the spot or anything.
Anet Kosane, Shao Deneke, Hatua Sugu, Yade, Yade, Ye Iki, I think.
Yeksha.
Akukwan hastu ani aya, kanishkade aya khatsati, akwa hatuasiku, kwan ha eat ye the she yeast to cut you han, gunishchish aya.
Gunishchish. Thank you both so much for coming on the show. Is there anything else that you would like to add?
Everyone is welcome.
Great. Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 27th of October, 2015. It's the birthday of Joseph Medicine Crow Highbird, born 1913 into the Absaluga people near Lodge Grass on the Crow Reservation in southern Montana, the oldest living man of the Crow tribe. Also the first member of his tribe to go to college. He was in the middle of graduate studies in anthropology when World War II began, and he joined the Army as an infantry scout. Returned to Montana, started writing academic works, collections of Crow stories, and his memoirs. His step-grandfather had been a scout for George Armstrong Custer and an eyewitness to Custer's last stand on the Little Bighorn. And Joseph Medicine Crow wrote about it in his book, Keep the Last Bullet for Yourself, The True Story of Custer's Last Stand. It's the birthday of Zadie Smith, born Sadie Smith in London, 1975, Jamaican mother, English father, wanted to be a tap dancer, then be a jazz singer. She managed to get into Cambridge, where she worked hard writing fiction. Wrote short stories, and one short story got too long to be a short story, and she kept writing, and eventually it became her first novel, White Teeth, came out in 2001. It's the birthday of the poet Sylvia Plath, born Boston, 1932, went to Smith while she was there. She struggled with bipolar, attempted suicide but survived, won a Fulbright scholarship to England, where she met the poet Ted Hughes, and they got married. Published her first book of poems, Colossus, in 1960, had a couple of kids. During a harsh winter of severe depression, she wrote most of the poems that became her book, Ariel. And it's the birthday of Dylan Thomas, born 1914 in Swansea, Wales, poet who traveled through America reading his work and who helped to popularize poetry readings. People flocked to see him. They loved his Welsh accent. He was extremely theatrical, and he was often drunk, so you had no idea what might happen at one of his readings. Here's a poem for today by Ann Porter, entitled Five Wishes. I'd like to have a wild bird perch on my hand, a sparrow or a chickadee, sudden with her sharp feet and fragile daring. I'd like to see again the etchings Rembrandt made of stories from the Bible, though they're as plain as Bethlehem's hay, a radiance fills them. And I would like to visit the Laguna Indians and their old church made of whitewashed clay with logs for rafters, and in it their Madonna, to whom they've given a white lace apron. And I would like to learn to accept my death, to accept our dying, that strange dawn so deeply scandalous that God himself wept at the death of his friend. I'd like to find the shrine of Chamayo, where the lame leave crutches. I'd like to go there with my daughter Katie. It would be enough just to be there without any miracle. Five Wishes, a poem by Ann Porter from her collection Living Things, published by Zoland Books and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity, introducing a 10-minute fit test to challenge memory, attention, and problem-solving to calculate baseline scores. Learn more at lumosity.com. And by TIAA CREF, a global financial company dedicated to delivering financial outcomes that matter. TIAA CREF, created to serve, built to perform. Learn more at TIAA.org. Produced by Joy Biles with Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, October 27th, 2015. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 23 minutes after the hour. I've been joined on the show now by Kelly Manning. She's the director over at the Canvas. Welcome to the show, Kelly.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, nice to have you here. So I know you have this very cool party coming up on Friday.
Absolutely. It's our annual Halloween party. We've been doing it for years and years, and it's always a lot of fun. Great way to get the community together around arts and you know, the spooky Halloween season. It just seems like art and Halloween go together so well.
What age range would appreciate this party?
You know, it's really open to any age, definitely family-friendly. We're going to have some sort of carnival games, and there's a range of levels for that. So younger kids, we've got, you know, we're going to have with this one great booth with one of our artists, Niall Johnson, where he's going to be teaching how to draw monsters that he draws, and he does these really fun, intricate monsters. And for younger kids, we'll have some of his drawings uncolored in that they can kind of color in on the sheet. So stuff for younger kids, stuff for older kids to, like, learn the technique. And so we try to kind of find that range for different community members. Definitely kind of family-oriented kinds of activities and games.
Yeah, sounds very interactive and learning at the same time, studying art and, you know, celebrating Halloween.
Right. Yeah, we always try to incorporate the art and, you know, have an arts activity around the holiday. But then also some games. You know, we've got a little, like, beanbag toss, and we'll have a little scavenger hunt and fishing for toys game, and then we have this one that's always been a big hit is we do an Oreo race, which is where you put an Oreo with the cream against your forehead and then try to get it to your mouth and race against another competitor, and that's always really popular. So some fun sort of just activity kinds of things, and costume contest. We always have lots of great costumes, and people of all ages come through, so it's a lot of fun.
Probably the most important question, what kind of candy are you going to have?
Well, we don't usually do a lot of candy, but we try to do fun little giveaways. So we've got, like, glow-in-the-dark bracelets and toys and kazoos and, you know, Halloween-themed giveaway toys. And then, of course, we'll have the Oreos. If you get it to your mouth, then you get to eat it.
What's your favorite part of this whole party?
Well, I have a storytelling background and writing background. So from following the carnival, we have a storytelling hour in the gallery, and that's definitely my favorite part. We bring in some community storytellers, and I have to tell a ghost story every year because it's just one of my favorite things. And we create a little we have a fake fire, and we have these fake rocks, and create a little sort of campfire atmosphere in the gallery and bring in some guest speakers to tell stories, and then we do an open mic for the second half of the storytelling hour, and people that come always get up and tell great stories as well, which is just as much fun as the scheduled stories.
And then a movie?
And then a movie, yeah. So we make a whole day of it. We start at 2 in the afternoon, do the carnival from 2 to 6, the storytelling from 6 to 7. We take a little break so that we can set up for the movie, and at 8 o'clock we're going to show Hocus Pocus this year. So we always do a Halloween-themed movie. And for those that don't remember, Hocus Pocus is the Bette Midler classic from the 90s. It's a lot of fun.
What's the cost?
It's a free event, free community event. Just really get people into the canvas and celebrate the great arts opportunities that we have and the great arts community that we have here.
Yeah, excellent. Speaking of opportunities, you have some classes going on too right now, right?
Absolutely, yeah. We've got a lot of classes coming up in November. We do have a couple of things that just to highlight. We're going to have a block printing class starting this Thursday, the 29th. It's a one-night class with our guest artist, Tim Ortiz, and they're just around for a little bit longer, so him and Andreana Donahue, so take advantage while you can. And then starting November 2nd, we have a two-week Mishima ceramics class, and this is a really great decorative technique for glazing, for doing underglazes, and you get really nice fine detail. It's a really beautiful technique. We've got some images of work on the website from our ceramics instructor, Mercedes Munoz, so you can kind of get a sense of what the technique looks like. And it's, again, a two-week class, Thursdays, starting November 2nd, and that's a $75 class. But really nice finish opportunity with that class. So it's a great one for people that have maybe done a little ceramics and want to take it to the next level.
Okay. If someone wants more information, where should they go?
Yeah, so all of our classes and events, everything's available on the website, so www.canvasarts.org, and we've got a new updated website, so it's really easy to navigate, and you can go in and sign up and pay online, which is really easy for getting into the classes and find out more details about any upcoming events, activities that we have going on.
Have you decided what your costume's going to be?
I have, and I always tell everybody, if you want to see, you've got to come to the party.
Mm-hmm. And so you did mention there's going to be a costume contest. Any advice for some of our young listeners right now thinking of maybe they want to make a costume? What's won in the past?
Well, you know, we do it by group applause. So, you know, something that's going to be a hit with a wide audience is always a good idea. Group costumes seem to be a big hit when people kind of come together around a theme. That always seems to be a big hit.
All right. Sounds like fun. So folks should show up at 2 p.m. in costume, yeah?
Yeah, Friday? Absolutely. Yep. And we'll probably do the costume contest midway through. And again, it's 2 to 6 for the carnival, 6 to 7 for the storytelling. And then the movie will start around 8.
Okay. Anything else you want to add, Kelly?
No, thank you so much for having me, and I hope to see lots of people show up for the Halloween party on Friday.
All right. Thanks, Kelly Manning. She's the director of the Canvas. See ya.
Thank you.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services in the Jordan Creek Center. Northern Audiology offers diagnostic medical hearing expertise and digital technology hearing instruments. 789-6780.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon on Tuesday, October 27th, 2015. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 25 minutes until the top of the hour. And joining me now in the studio is artist extraordinaire M.K. McNaughton. Welcome to the show, M.K.
Thank you, Scott.
So we were just talking about all the stuff that you have coming up, and my notes section is full completely. You're busy.
I'm trying.
It's a good thing. Tell us about the new sketch, the new M.K. McNaughton. Or it's not the new M.K. McNaughton, but just the sketch that you have down here in the studio and all that.
Well, my studio is called Sketch in honor of rough edges and ideas. And I teach classes, and then I make my own drawings and paintings to exhibit. And I guess my strength as a teacher is sharing what I'm working on. I don't claim to be an expert at anything, but I have a pretty good practice myself, so that's what I can share with people. And I consider art making as a problem-solving activity. So there's no such thing as a good or a bad piece, but how, like, we look at it and we think about what we want to do to change it or not. And I benefit from that, and I can share that.
Okay. And you have some classes that are coming up, quite a few. Tell us about those.
I do, yes. I've been having a lot of fun teaching mixed media to kids, so I'm going to continue those. I have three different sessions. One is for little kids, 5 and 6, and it's really about taking your ideas and turning them into art using a huge variety of materials. That's Sunday mornings from 10 to 11:30. And then I have bigger kids, mixed media, on Wednesday and Monday and Wednesday. And I plan my classes from 3:45 to 5:15 so that kids who are going to the middle schools can catch the activity bus downtown. It works out just right. So that's why I have this funny start time of 3:45, but it's for kids 7 and up. So I usually have elementary and middle school kids together in that. And then adult oil painting is teens are welcome. I consider teens adults. And that is on Wednesday nights, 5:30 to 8. And then I have one other session that's a new class for me. It's one other class. I have two sessions of it on Sunday afternoons. It's making gifts for the holidays. And it is a little bit longer class, 2.5 hour long. And it's, most of my classes are process oriented. We do a lot of stuff, but it's about learning and skill building, and the product isn't always the goal, but in the gift making it is. You want to end up with a lot of stuff. So I've ordered a lot of little tiny, the mini canvases. I love painting on them with the cute little easels, and enough for each person to potentially paint up to 10 mini oil paintings. And I have some strategies and ideas for making wrapping paper and cards. And I'm open to other things too, but the ideas that we'll make sets of cards and mini masterpieces that you can give away to your friends.
Wow, that sounds like fun. Where are you located? Where is the studio?
I am on the grand corner of Front and Main, but I'm hidden in plain sight. I'm right behind Kenny's. That Walkin' Teriyaki, that golden building across from the big parking garage, and I'm back by the propane tanks.
Okay. What's the atmosphere like inside the studio? What do one of your classes look like?
They, I think they're very joyous, really. They're fun. The people who find me really want to take art classes, so it's really fun for me. Sometimes I just watch people when they're painting, and I never get tired of it. So, and it's fun, the different ages, the different energies, chemistry of every class.
Well, I was going to say that's maybe one of the most important parts of art, right, is the process and how they feel while they're making it.
Yeah, yeah. And encouraging each other and learning the language to talk about art, because we don't learn that, really. So we practice that. I forgot to say the gift making is multi-age, too, which I love. The other classes are kind of broken down by age, but gift making, I said 7 and up. I figured it would be a great class for a grandparent and a grandkid to take together, or a parent and a kid.
Fun. I bet you have this all outlined on your website.
I do.
Which is?
M.K. MacNaughton, and that's M-A-C, mkmacnaughton.com.
Okay. Have we covered most of the classes?
We have, okay. Except for art catering.
All right. Tell us about that.
I love to make things up. I have lots of ideas and lots of projects that I've used for art catering. So that is setting up a party for you, whatever you want. If I've done parties in people's houses, and I've hosted them in my studio. And there's info on my website about this, too. My studio comfortably holds 8 max, so I like to have those parties smaller. I did one recently, actually, for a financial advisor from Sitka. And she had more than 8 people. She had people coming through. So I guess that worked. But we did felting and encaustic painting, which is hot beeswax with pigment in it. So I had two stations set up for her, and she brought snacks. And I've done that at people's houses. Once I did a group of moms who were wanting a break from their young kids, put the kids to bed, and they had wine and chocolate. They provided that, and I brought in the art project. And I'm your art waitress. I set it up.
And what was the art that they practiced?
We did encaustic painting, okay. the bubbling wax. I did, I like to make baskets out of chopped up books, and I did that for a group of friends for brunch at one of their houses once. And I brought all the materials, and they had this incredible brunch spread. So I eat well at these events, too. I've also had, right now I have three different classes that are four-week, multi-week classes that people have just set up with their own groups of friends. So I can do that, too. If you have your own class, you already have 6 to 8 people, I can set up a multi-week class just for you.
What's an example of an art catering project that you'd like to do that you haven't done yet?
An art catering project? I love charcoal drawing, so I'd love to do more of that, I think. I'd love to lead. Encaustic painting is nice because it's great for a group when there are people who are afraid of art, depending on your crowd. If it's I did that for a workplace once. The Council on Domestic Violence hired me to do a retreat, an hour, one day, and I attached a writing assignment to that. And an hour and a half is usually a good length of time for an art party. That's, I think, fun and not too long, just the right time. But I'd like to do charcoal drawing. And I think next summer I would be interested in hosting one or two parties out at Shelter Island. My family and I have been building two cabins on a piece of property, and they're in really good shape right now. We worked hard this summer. And as we closed the cabin up last weekend and we were driving away, I thought it'd be fun to bring people out for a day or a whole weekend. And I would provide the lodging, the transportation, food, and art.
Okay.
And so I'd be happy to talk to people about that.
Excellent. And you were just talking about charcoal drawing, which is the perfect segue to grit, right?
Yes.
Tell us about how GRIT's going.
Thank you. Well, GRIT is a one-year-long project, and I think you're my best fan of this, Scott. Thank you. I decided to draw a portrait a week for the whole year of people who work in mostly hard jobs outside in the elements. I was inspired by some guys working in the dumping rain and snow a couple winters ago. So I just hung the 43rd portrait to hang at the Jack in the lobby over the couch, and I need 7 more people to round out the year. I have the next 2 in progress, but I'm wondering what professions I'm missing, and I welcome suggestions. And grit is, I mean, a lot of people have hard jobs, but this is about people who have an extra something, like an extra integrity or hardworking ethic, or some of them are stubborn. That's a common trait that's popped up. And sometimes there's something difficult in somebody's past that has influenced making them the strong person they are. Sometimes it's just a great role model.
So you're about to hang 43.
About to hang 44 next 44. Monday.
And of course you'll have 52 total.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to put us at what? Pretty close to the new year, right?
I end the last Monday of December.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm hanging them every Monday for the whole year.
And give us a few examples of folks that you have drawn.
Well, coming up next week, in progress right now, is Gabe Meacham, who's a underground miner. He works for Kensington Mine. And I have truck drivers, power linemen, welders, logger, an outdoor daycare provider, chefs, tribal child welfare, bike racers, people who work in detox, janitor, fishermen, a couple fishermen, heavy equipment operators, several, and nurses.
Person who works at the prison.
Person who works at the prison and somebody who works for probation, a firefighter. Quite a few people are also firefighters, or quite a few of them popped up. Bus driver. I did, after working for 25 years in nonprofits, I had to include and elementary school teacher, which isn't a nonprofit, but I had to include, and a stay-at-home mom, and a midwife. I've included. Oh, and I really worked hard to get somebody who works in trash and somebody who works in sewage, because I think those are such important services for our community. And the goal of this project is to recognize the people who make our town a nice place to live, but don't necessarily make the paper. I mean, the sewer doesn't stop. You know, it's 24/7.
If somebody has an idea for who might be a good subject for you, should they go to your website?
Yes, my email and phone number are on my website. mkmack@gci.net is my email, and it's there on my website.
And if anyone's interested, I got to sit down with you halfway through this project. I guess, what was that, 26, something like that. And you can see that video if you go to kto.org and just search for M.K. McNaughton. You can see examples of these portraits. Well, you are busy, but it sounds like good busy.
I think I said the wrong email. Can I say it again?
Yeah, go for
the
it.
The right email for me is mkmack@gci.net.
And give us your website once more.
mkmacnaughton.com.
All right. Well, I wish we had more time to talk. What else? Are we missing anything? Anything
no,
you want
to add?
No, I
think that's plenty. People want to hear from me. But come on Saturday. Do we say that for trick-or-treating?
No, we didn't say
oh,
that.
Oh, yeah. It's a free thing that over 30 businesses downtown are doing. So come by between 2 and 6. And people are giving away things. I have a project you can do. All
cool.
ages.
Kind of like an open house even, so you can see what your studio's
yeah,
like.
Yeah, you can give me ideas for great characters or poke around the studio. Back behind, by the propane tanks behind Kenny's.
Saturday, 2 to 6. M.K. Yeah. McNaughton, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Hey. Unitarian Universalist Fellowship is a welcoming congregation embracing many different beliefs and invites the community to join them on Sundays at 10 a.m. at the Temple Sukkot Shalom on Cordova Street in Douglas. More information is at juuf.org. This message brought to you by the Juneau Unitarian Universalist Fellowship.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon on Tuesday, October 27th, 2015. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 8 minutes until the top of the hour. And I've been joined by a couple of teachers from Thunder Mountain High School, digital arts teacher, Jonna Lelchuk. Welcome to the show, Jonna.
Thank you. Hello. Yeah,
it's nice to have you here. And also Rebecca Daniel. She's an IT teacher out at Thunder Mountain. Is that right?
For the school district.
Oh, for the school district. Okay. And we're here to talk about the I Did A Photo Contest. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. So am I correct in that this is the second year it's running in Juneau, Jonna?
Yes, this is our second year, but this is not something new. This contest was organized a few years ago, and it's part of ASTI, which is Alaska Society for Technology. Am I saying it right? Alaska Society for Technology and Education.
Okay.
Yes. And it's a state competition, but we decided that we wanted to do it on our local level in Juneau. And the reason for that is because we have this amazing teacher. She was teaching digital arts. Her name was Jan Niemeyer, and she passed away a couple mm-hmm. years ago. And she was a huge supporter of I Did A Contest, and she wanted to have it on the Juneau level, but she never actually did that, so we are doing it for her.
Okay, and so this is a photography contest for high school students?
No, not only for high schools.
Okay.
This is photography and digital arts contest. It is for high school students, and it's also for middle school students. This year, we even want to experiment and open it for elementary school kids on fourth and fifth grades, see how that goes.
Okay. Rebecca, you're a judge, right, for
yes.
this contest?
Yes.
I bet that's not easy.
No, it was very hard to choose.
Tell us about some examples of work that people submitted last year.
There were photos of reflections. There were photos with different perspectives, like some of the students got down really low and took photos ground level facing out. And then there were some group photos, individual photos, selfies. There was a lot. There was a lot of photos. Really good.
Yeah. It sounds like some unique perspectives.
Yes, there was.
And lots of landscape, lots of portraiture.
There was, I think, a good number. I would this year like to see more landscape, personally.
Oh, really?
That's one of my favorites that I do.
I was going to ask you for hints for our listeners.
Yeah, more landscape and maybe some more wildlife photography to get out and walk the trails. And
videos, too.
Yes, videos. Mm-hmm.
I was going to ask you, what is the scope of digital arts for this contest?
We have three categories for photography. It is Life in Alaska, Tell Me a Story, which is pretty much anything, and also digitally enhanced. Digitally enhanced means that a photograph can be manipulated using Photoshop or any other programs, software. For videos, we have also three categories, Life in Alaska, Tell Me a Story, and Make Me Laugh, because there is no digital enhanced video. So the third category for video would be Make Me Laugh. We have some limitations. If you allow me, I will explain that too. The photographs should not exceed 1 megabyte in size, and videos should not be longer than 2 minutes. And also, each student can submit one entry per category, which means each student can submit 3 photographs and 1 video.
Okay. Somebody wants more information. Where should they go, or who should they call?
We ask librarians, school librarians, to help us. So all the videos and all the photographs should be submitted to school librarians. They are informed, and they are open for entries. And if they have questions, they can also go to the librarians, or they can find me, and it's easy. My email is jana.lelchuk@junoschools.org. It's on the school site.
And what are prizes like?
Last year, we actually had good prizes. We had iTunes cards, and we had movie passes, and we had candy and chocolate, and one winner won a right to go to the state ASTI.
But it's not about the winning. It's about the process,
right? It's not. It's the process itself. Kids just love doing that. Right now, in digital arts, they are not only, you know, doing it for grades, they're having fun. They're creating images, and like right now for Halloween time, they have this amazing project for, like, they're like zombies. They make zombies out of themselves and like all kinds of things.
Well, it sounds like fun, and it's open to all ages pretty much, right? Elementary, middle school, and high school?
Yes, yes. And we encourage middle schools and elementary schools to submit their entries too. Last year we had about, we had actually more than 50 entries last year overall, but we only had two entries from middle school, from Floyd Dryden. Maybe Dizzy, I don't remember exactly. But we have two entries from middle schools, and we would like to have more. We would like to encourage kids to participate.
And it sounds like a good place to get information is at the school library.
Yes.
And anywhere else you want to remind us of?
They can go to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, my...
They can also find me through the school district IT department, Rebecca Daniels at junoschools.org.
Okay. Well, thank you both for coming on the show. I wish we had more time.
Thank you.
Else
thank
either
you.
Either of you would like to add? All right. Thanks for tuning in to a Juno afternoon. Tune in tomorrow. Jamie Waste will be your host. And the forecast tonight looks mostly cloudy. Chance of rain late, lows 37 to 43.